Hello, today is Thursday the 11th of January 2018, and this, I believe, is the first talking newspaper for this year, but certainly the first one which I've edited. This is the Saturn edition of the St Albans Talking Newspaper. I'm Malcolm, and I've chosen the music and articles. We'll be making some announcements and occasionally involved with reading. The readers who are helping me are, in order of reading, John, Angela, Roy and Kate. Danny is our studio manager and is recording and editing this recording. Fiona organises distribution, and Jenny and Mecky copy the master memory stick onto the listener's sticks. The music you've just heard is Blue Skies and is composed, recorded and produced by Goffby. Our news articles are chosen from today's edition of the Hearts Advertiser. The first is read by John.
Hello everyone. Right, well, the headline across this week's edition of the Advertiser is 15,000 new homes set to be built across the district. Consultation into St Albans' new local plan is now open for 6 weeks, and the District Council is urging every resident to get involved. The final document will detail all development in St Albans District from 2020 to 2036, including nearly 15,000 new homes, 14 schools, and various new green spaces, with 8 greenbelt sites already identified for housing. The former strategic local plan, which was discarded by the High Court last summer, made provision for only 436 new homes each year. Since then, government pressure and a new standardised methodology for calculating housing need has skyrocketed these projections to around 900 a year. If the proposed methodology is approved, St Albans will need to take on a 25% uplift compared to existing homes, the equivalent to more than another Harpenden, and landowners are being urged to come forward with additional sites for consideration. The portfolio holder for planning at St Albans District Council is Councillor Mary Maynard, and she said that new developments were unavoidable as the district had to make up for a lack of house building over the last 40 years. But she stressed the government housing projections are overestimated and based on unrepresentative data about the average earnings of St Albans workers and residents, and they were hoping the target could be reduced. The consultation is part of St Albans and District Council's response to threats by Community Secretary Sajid Javid that if a local plan is not implemented soon, the government may intervene to ensure one is quickly produced. If this happens, St Albans people won't have as much autonomy to shape development plans in many ways that are acceptable to them.
Hello, I'm Angela. And my first story this week is headed Trust in Charge of St Albans Hospital Moved Out of Special Measures After Inspection. The NHS body responsible for St Albans City Hospital has been taken out of special measures by the Care Quality Commission, the CQC. The condition was lifted off West Hearts Hospital Trust, WHHT, which also manages Watford General and Hemel Hempstead Hospital, after an inspection last summer. WHHT's chair, Professor Steve Barnett, said, "Even the quickest glance makes it clear that we have come a long, long way since being placed in special measures in 2015. Events in recent weeks only emphasise the kind of workforce we're so lucky to have. We won a national award from the Health Service Journal. Our medical director was invited to present nationally about our low mortality rates. And staff struggled through snow and ice to keep our services going and our patients safe. I am immensely proud of our staff. They never stop wanting to improve, to learn and to deliver the very best care for every patient every day. Our leadership teams, from the board to the wards, have been growing in strength over the last few years, and this has played a big part in our move out of special measures. I was thrilled to see the volunteer-run carer support team was praised by the CQC for the support they give to the parents and friends of unwell babies and children. While the Trust was given a requires improvement rating, St Albans City Hospital now has no inadequate ratings. It still requires improvement overall, and inspectors say the hospital needs to improve its minor injuries unit and outpatient and diagnostic imaging. But the surgery team was rated good across all five criteria: safety, leadership, effectiveness, caring and responsiveness.
Hello, this is Roy. My first article is entitled Beds Gets the Gain, Hearts Gets the Pain. MPs respond to airport expansion plans. The planned expansion of Luton Airport and the impact aircraft noise will have on local communities have been condemned by local MPs. London Luton Airport LLA will celebrate its 25th anniversary this year with the opening of a new terminal building, offering passengers new shops and restaurants and 8 additional boarding gates. Airlines are also introducing new routes, with Wizz Air offering 8 new destinations and EasyJet offering 5. Luton Borough Council has also proposed to expand the airport to accommodate 36 to 38 million passengers under the London Luton Airport Vision for Sustainable Growth 2020 to 2050. In a debate in Parliament on Tuesday, St Albans MP Anne Main said that the proposed Luton Airport expansion must not go ahead if strong protections against further noise pollution are not deliverable and guaranteed. Mrs Main spoke on behalf of residents who have been affected by aircraft noise, saying that there has been a 150% increase in complaints since the airport introduced the new RNAV navigation system in 2015, which narrows flight paths and concentrates noise over a smaller area. She also criticised the way that noise levels are measured. In their most recent report, the airport measured the average noise level during a 16-hour day to be 47 dB, which is the equivalent of somewhere between a quiet office and a bedroom. Mrs Main said, "Standing in my constituents' gardens, that is not the experience of residents. An average over a 16-hour day was given when noise can be felt in different ways. At 6 o'clock in the morning, I'm aware of the noise far more than at 10 o'clock in the morning, when my washing machine and dishwasher are going. So the average masks the true life experience of residents and is bogus." Harpenden MP Bim Afolami agreed with Mrs Main, explaining that the number of passengers per year has increased by 70% over the past 7 years, and that noise complaints had increased 22-fold in 2 years. He said, "Luton Borough Council's ownership of Luton Airport leaves many of my constituents feeling that Luton Borough Council has only one real interest, growing passenger numbers and therefore revenue for its airport. That interest has been pursued without any real consideration for the significant negative impacts on the people of Hertfordshire that I've outlined here today. As one of my constituents put it to me, Bedfordshire gets the gain and Hertfordshire gets the pain."
Hi, I'm Kate, and the first article that I'm reading is "Jury is out on proposed London road changes." Planned changes to a major city thoroughfare have come under fire from neighbours. Herts County Council has decided to spend Section 106 money from the nearby Gabriel Square development on tackling safety issues on London Road. The plans involve widening the pavement near the entrance to the Odyssey Cinema to help people coming and going from the venue. A pedestrian crossing will be moved from the eastern entrance to the Esso garage, closer to the other entrance point. But London Road resident Paul Davies said, "I consider the whole thing a waste of time and money. They have the Section 106 money from Gabriel Square, and they need to use it for something before the expiry date. Section 106 agreements can involve a developer paying money to the local authority to offset a development, in this case the luxury flats and townhouses of Gabriel Square. He said, "The problem at the moment is people turning right out of the fuel station. If they move to the crossing to the other end of that station, they will encounter a small problem with the other exit, because people use that western entrance as an exit as well. People will turn left out of there onto the crossing." Mr. Davies argued that the cinema wasn't a concern. "Unless it's absolutely full, you do not get a lot of people coming out. It's never been a problem. The pavement widening would also entail the loss of about 6 parking spaces, which are really valuable to shopkeepers and residents." The Liberal Democrats have surveyed local residents and said people are generally pleased with the proposals. County Councillor for St Albans Central, Chris White, said, "There is a lot of foot traffic around and it's not terribly pedestrian friendly. The other thing is the southernmost exit from the Esso garage, where people are swinging right immediately onto a Pelican crossing." The County Council also wants to change the roundabout linking London Road to Thalma Road by extending the median, mid-road waiting point, nearest to the cinema by 3 metres, and moving the median on Thalma Road nearer to London Road. Mr Davis worries this will mean HEV drivers will not be able to turn their lorries around on the roundabout before coming into the city centre. He said he would prefer the money was spent on the crossing outside Play School Nursery on Thalma Road. People have been nearly run over on that crossing. He suggested making the crossing much more visible to drivers by installing a larger speed bump known as the table.
Now, with this next item, which does contain a bit of jargon, I fear, is entitled "Road to Local Plan Was Not a Smooth Journey." More than a decade ago, councillors started work on a planning document to supersede the outdated 1994 version. Over the years, this strategic local plan would become the subject of much controversy and eventually be thrown out by a High Court judge. They faced objections from neighbouring councils in the South West Harts Group, that's SWHG. They were Dacorum, Hartsmere, Three Rivers and Watford. They all said that St Albans Council had not cooperated fully with them when proposing to build thousands of homes on their borders. And they disagreed with St Albans Council's housing needs predictions, rating them far too low. In 2016... the planning inspector, David Hogger, recommended the document be withdrawn and rewritten, but St Albans District Council fought to save it at the High Court, spending £35,000 in legal fees. However, Judge Sir Ross Cranston upheld Mr Hogger's ruling and the council was forced to rethink and start over. This time, the council is working alongside the South West Harts Group and including provision for thousands of extra homes in their new local plan. It follows the government stepping in last September and proposing a standardised calculation for housing to be used across the whole country. This is based on what's called an affordability ratio and implemented where house prices are more than 4 times the average earnings. So for every 1% the ratio rises, the housing assessment also increases by 0.25%. At first, it was thought this would increase the council's housing projections from 8,100 to more than 16,000. But a shift in the timescale has meant that St Albans Council is now working with a figure of nearly 15,000. Although that proposal has not yet been approved, the council has made provision for the inflated target in their new local plan. The Community Secretary, Sajid Javid, also wrote to St Albans District Council asking why the document is yet to materialise. He threatened government intervention if reasons for the delay were not persuasive. In the 13 years that have passed since the 2004 Act, Local Plan, was introduced, your council has failed to meet the deadlines set out in that timetable. St Albans and District Council must respond to Mr Javid by the end of this month, January 31st.
And this next article is headed Petition to Build a New A&E Hospital is Backed by Former Labour MP. A petition to build a new A&E hospital, central to St Albans, Watford and Decorum, is being supported by former Labour MP Kerry Pollard. Campaigner Andy Love created the petition calling on the West Harts Hospital Trust, the WHHT, to create a new hospital in a more central and accessible location than Watford General Hospital in Vicarage Road, Watford. The Trust has submitted plans to redevelop both Watford General Hospital and St Albans City Hospital over the next 12 years, which Andy argues would cause considerable disruption to both patients and staff. Writing to Mr Pollard, St Albans MP Anne Main and Lib Dem candidate Daisy Cooper, Andy said, "The St Albans residents I speak to are very unhappy with the current location of their A&E hospital, being at Vicarage Road, due to it being hard to get to at peak times of the day by either car or public transport, being situated on a hill, having limited car parking and being right next to a Premier League football ground. St Albans and District surely has a large enough population to have much better access to an A&E hospital, especially when there is talk of so many more houses being built in the area over the coming decades. I have started the petition to enable St Albans residents to have a voice on this important topic." Andy clarified that the petition was not calling for the closure of either Watford General or St Albans City Hospitals, but was looking for a better long-term solution for the area. Mr Pollard replied that he was happy to support the petition. He said, "You may recall that when I was MP, that agreement had been reached to build a new teaching hospital on a site, a lorry park, just across from Harts University, where we already have the best nurses training school in the country." Daisy Cooper explained that she was unable to support the petition because Watford General Hospital is now more easily accessible due to the new hospital link road. She also argued that a site central to St Albans, Watford and Decorum would be adjacent to the M25 and that traffic accidents could bring ambulances to a standstill. Ms Cooper also explained that a new super hospital would likely cause St Albans City Hospital to close and the building of a new hospital would likely take years. She told Andy that the Lib Dems want to combine the funding for health and social services to prevent delayed discharge from hospital, or bed blocking as it's known. She said, "I would much prefer that any available funds were redirected to properly funding social care, which would in turn reduce the pressure on our hospitals." MP Anne Main also refused to support the petition, saying, "The petition does not mention that any new central hospital would be conditional upon the retention of services at St Albans City Hospital. The risk of St Albans losing too many services is too great. On this basis, I cannot support a standalone concept of a new hospital without that essential condition." She did, however, agree that in ideal circumstances, a central hospital would be desirable.
Planning permission granted for new affordable homes in village, despite initial refusal. Planning permission has been granted to build affordable homes on old allotments plots in Sandridge, despite the scheme being initially refused by St Albans Council. The Council's Planning Referrals Committee met on Monday to discuss the proposal to build 14 semi-detached three-bedroom homes on land between Hopkins Crescent and the former Baptist Chapel on St Albans Road. In October, Council officers recommended councillors refuse outline planning permission because of a lack of surface water drainage assessment, and because greenbelt land can only be used for affordable housing if the site does not exceed 0.4 hectares, while the proposed site is 0.46 hectares. In Monday's meeting, planning agent Brian Parker said, "Applications for 100% affordable housing are allowed in the greenbelt under Policy 8 of the local plan. There are three reasons for refusal. One, inappropriate development in the greenbelt because your officers were convinced that these are not affordable houses. Two, the lack of affordable housing. And three, the lack of surface water drainage assessment. The council's officers claim that no evidence was submitted to demonstrate the need for three-bedroom shared ownership houses was as bogus as the claims the flood authority made in its application. Common sense dictates that reason one and two are unjustified. Councillor Sally Gagus, who was chairing the meeting, said, "This is a greenbelt site. We have the right to defend this land on the basis that it did not qualify for very special circumstances. The mistake we have made is the flood risk." Before the committee took a vote, Solicitor Charles Turner said, "This committee refused its applications for three reasons, and one of the reasons subsequently turned out to be undefendable on appeal. Members have to think very carefully about whether they cannot go behind the reason that they've already given." The majority of committee members voted to grant the recommendation, while two members abstained from the vote.
The article I'm reading is "Shortage of Drivers Blamed for Major Service Problems on Thameslink Line." A lack of drivers was why Govia Thameslink Railway, GTR, passengers suffered the worst performance on the UK's entire rail network, according to a National Audit Office NAO report. The NAO found track failure was another cause of the 7.7% of services cancelled or delayed by more than 30 minutes between July 2015 and March 2017. Train reliability, Network Rail's management of the rail network, and failures of infrastructure assets such as signalling were also found to be at blame. Network Rail and the Department for Transport, DfT, were also criticised for not having a good understanding of the infrastructure's frailty. GTR's chief executive, Charles Horton, said, "The Thameslink Southern and Great Northern, TSGN, franchise is making good progress in delivering a major upgrade programme to improve reliability and boost capacity on the most congested part of the UK rail network. As part of this drive to modernise, we are pioneering improvements in trains and technology and have updated practices for train drivers and crew that other operators are only now adopting. Passengers will increasingly see the benefits of this modernisation project in terms of reliability, punctuality and new journey options. We are glad the National Audit Office has recognised these passenger benefits and forecast Thameslink has a realistic chance of delivering value for money." TSGN is the UK's largest franchise, carrying almost 1 million passengers a day, and the report identifies numerous root causes for the challenges it has faced since its formation in 2014. "These difficulties have sometimes been greater than expected, and we regret the disruption caused to our passengers. It is only right a franchise of DSGN's unprecedented scale and ambition receives scrutiny, and I am more confident than ever that its trailblazing achievements will be felt by rail travellers for generations to come." A Network Rail spokesperson said, "Growing passenger numbers and congestion has meant that even small incidents can cause significantly more delay than another less crowded part of the network. The completion of the Thameslink programme and a £300 million programme to boost the reliability of tracks and signalling will deliver big benefits to passengers."
Well, here's another article about housing. The article includes a nice aerial photograph of Redbourne with a sort of red line drawn around certain significant parts. And it also includes a word which I hope doesn't catch on, but I'll let you know now. It's called densification. "The district will have to forfeit swathes of greenbelt land to accommodate an influx of new homes. If the government white paper called Fixing Our Broken Housing Market, if this goes ahead, St Albans District Council will be forced to build almost 15,000 homes of varying types before 2036, including social, affordable and properties for the elderly. The problem faced by the council is that 81% of all land in St Albans District is greenbelt and the other 19% has few suitable brownfield sites. Four new settlements, on top of four already set aside in the former strategic local plan, have already been identified in the new local plan as being least harmful to the green belt. The sites have been identified as: north west of Harpenden, north-east Harpenden, north of St Albans, east of St Albans, land at Coney, London Coney, land at Chiswell Green, east Hemel Hempstead south, and east Hemel Hempstead north. If the plans go ahead, the new settlements could accommodate 6,500 homes and all associated infrastructure, schools, parks, GP surgeries, roads. A further 5,000 homes would be integrated into already built-up areas using a process of densification. All this still leaves a 3,000 home shortfall, which St Albans and District Council, SADC of course, is yet to make provision for, and landowners are being asked to offer spaces to fill the gap. Sites already owned by public sector bodies like Herts County Council will be given priority in this process. Portfolio holder for planning at the council, Councillor Mary Maynard, says although people are often reluctant to relinquish greenbelt land, densification comes with its own challenges. What are the issues if we encourage more densification? What are the pros and cons? The pros are that we don't touch greenbelt land, so we still have that. What are the cons? The cons are actually infrastructure. The more you densify, the more pressure you put on existing infrastructure. She added, greenbelt objectives are not about having nice rolling hills. They're about maintaining a good distance between settlements and maintaining farming land. That's the sort of thing they are for. She said, there is a misunderstanding that greenbelt land is for preserving ecology, when in fact it is just a lack of development.
And now we're heading into space. The headline is Space is the Limit for Town Tech Firm After Award Wins. A space electronics company based in Harpenden has won two prestigious awards, one for the second year running. The company is called Space Chips, and it makes onboard processors for small satellites, Earth observation payloads, a lunar rover, a suborbital tourist space plane, electric propulsion avionics, and launcher electronics. It took home the New Company of the Year and High Reliability Product of 2017 accolades at the Electra Awards in London. Company founder and CEO and real-life rocket scientist, Dr. Rajan Bedi, said, "We are over the moon. We are a small three-year-old company, so we are very, very pleased and have won New Company of the Year and have won High Reliability Product of the Year for 2 years in a row, the first company ever to do so." The Northern Irish-born 49-year-old started Space Chips in 2014 and it now exports to 20 countries around the world. "We are very innovative. We innovated a number of products and services which the market really likes and people in this industry really likes," Dr. Bedi said. He explained how he came to set up the company. "I had a number of ideas. I wanted to innovate. It was a risky thing to do, but so far so good. We think 2018 is going to be an extremely busy year." Space Chips has also been shortlisted for an International Company of the Year award by Biz for Biz, a Hertfordshire-based business network. Space Chips, in addition to producing technology, also offers business intelligence consultancy and training services. In 2018, they were helped train NASA and the Japanese and Indian space agencies.
Radlett MP promoted. Radlett's MP, Oliver Dowden, says he's delighted after being promoted during this week's cabinet reshuffle. The Hartsmere representative has been made parliamentary secretary at the cabinet office and will report to the department's minister, David Liddington MP. Mr. Dowden, who only became parliamentary private secretary to the defence secretary last July, will now be being responsible for cross-government policy implementation. Tory MP said, "I'm delighted to have been appointed as Minister for Implementation at the Cabinet Office. It's an honour to be able to serve Hartsmere and the country by helping to ensure that the government delivers on the things that matter to people. Of course, I will continue to work as our area's local MP representing the people of Hartsmere. And the article is accompanied by a photo of a delighted-looking Oliver Dowden.
The article I'm reading is Public Consultation Launches on Future of Hearts Libraries. A public consultation has been launched over a proposal to create an independent organisation to deliver Hertfordshire's library services on behalf of the cash-strapped County Council, which is struggling to balance its books. The Inspiring Libraries consultation opened on Monday and runs until February 18, seeking views on an independent organisation, such as a social enterprise charity or cooperative, delivering library services on behalf of Hearts County Council. The local authority says this could achieve a potential saving in non-domestic rates and may enable the service to access grants and other sources of funding that would not be available to the County Council. The proposal is part of the strategy Inspiring Libraries, the next phase, which was agreed by the County Council in November and sets out the priorities for Hertfordshire Libraries for 2018 to 2021. It follows on from the original Inspiring Library strategy, which was launched in 2014 and saw the county's libraries ranked in tiers and services reduced from November 2015. Under Tier 1, St Albans and Harpenden Libraries offer the broadest range of services and the longest opening hours, with library staff on hand at all times. Radlett and Marshalswick both fall under Tier 2, which provides core services with the option to have extended hours through volunteer-supervised self-service. London Colney, Redbourne and Wheathampstead Libraries are ranked under Tier 3, with self-service facilities which can be added to with the help of volunteers. The Inspiring Libraries strategy is on track to achieve the expected £2.5 million in savings, but continuing pressure on funding for public services means an additional £500,000 in savings needs to be found by 2019 to 2020.
I'm sorry about the innumerable articles I've selected on planning, but the appropriate committee has obviously been extremely busy, and I believe that you have the right to know why and what your elected representatives have decided to plan. There will now be a short musical interval. In this part of the programme, we will read the Advertiser's editor's comments and the Chamber of Commerce's chairman's comments, readers' letters and further news items. These are followed by the radio listings prepared by a selection of our volunteers. Now we return to John for the second part.
Well, this next item is from the Hearts Advertiser editorial, and it backs up what's been said already with the heading, "Don't bury your heads in the sand." Let's get one thing clear, the editorial says. Let's get one thing clear from the outset. Thousands of new homes have to be built across the district, and insisting otherwise is futile. The council's new local plan has been designed to identify those sites which the council believes will have the minimum impact on the Greenbelt while still hitting the government's target for new homes. Without doubt, there are going to be a lot of unhappy people with the 8 sites already earmarked for development, and just wait until the landowners come forward with additional locations to add to this. Unfortunately, decades of house building inactivity has led to a massive shortfall in properties, especially affordable homes and social housing, which the council needs to rectify over the next 20 years. What we now need to do is to ensure these 15,000 new homes are in the best locations and accompanied by the necessary infrastructure. We certainly aren't in a position to kick up a stink about this and insist that they should be built somewhere else. We have already passed that point. NIMBYism will unquestionably be rife throughout the whole consultation process as residents realise the implications of thousands of new homes on their doorstep. But ultimately, these developments will have to be built somewhere, and there will always be people unhappy at the final decision. The district we know will forever be changed over the next 20 years, and these new properties dramatically transform certain sections of the community. But if managed correctly, this doesn't have to be to our detriment. New housing developments could result in the end of the much-hated rail freight scheme. It may allow for a new football stadium. It may ensure that our children and their children are able to live in the communities where they grew up and bring about much-needed improvements in infrastructure. Preserving the status quo is no longer an option, but being involved in the process of change is, and we would urge everyone who cares about how the district is going to develop in the decades to come to have their say during this consultation process.
And this is an article by David Clark, who is the president of the Chamber of Commerce. And it's headed Looking Ahead for the Year. As this is my first article of 2018, let me take this opportunity to wish you a very happy and prosperous new year. It's always interesting to me that annual milestones, such as the start of a new year, can act as a catalyst for change, with new resolutions adopted and a whole new resolve to do things differently in the year ahead. This reinvigoration to set about delivering aspirations for the forthcoming year with increased energy and focus is, I believe, very useful and certainly galvanises the mind. For me, the short festive break allowed me to reflect on the work of the Chamber throughout 2017 and refocus on what is important for the year ahead. Firstly, 2018 will be a year where the Chamber welcomes several new directors and the recruitment process is well underway to secure these appointments. We will also be saying a fond farewell to several directors who will be leaving the Chamber after an extensive period on the board, and I'm extremely grateful for their support over the years, which for some represents a 10-year commitment. Secondly, the new year is a good time to redouble our efforts to work to deliver business growth within St Albans City and District, which will in turn continue to create new employment opportunities, increase productivity and ensure local wealth creation, which can be reinvested in our communities right across the district. Thirdly, it's essential that we work in a collegiate manner with all interested business groups across the district and across our wider region in order to deliver these important outcomes in the most effective way. Specifically, this means engaging locally and working closely with our friends at St Albans BID, the Local Enterprise Partnership, the Hertfordshire Growth Hub, fellow chambers within the county and other important interest groups, including the Strategic Visitor Partnership, local education establishments and the City of Expertise, to ensure we are driving the relevant initiatives forward, which will deliver these aspirations of increased job creation, productivity and wealth creation.
This is a letter from Phil Fletcher of Sotwell Lane, St Albans. And it's headed Alban Way and Air Pollution. I refer to your article, Alban Way Will Remain Unlit Despite Recent Safety Fears, in which Debbie White, St Alban District Council's Head of Community Services, states that there are no plans to provide lighting along the Alban Way. One very important factor is a large number of monitoring tests by a number of organisations, including St Alban's Green Party, which show that air pollution levels in St Albans are consistently over the EU legal limit. Air pollution is a grave public health issue. The report published in February 2016 on the effects of air pollution produced by the Royal College of Physicians, called Every Breath We Take, found that children's lungs can be stunted by 90% and that air pollution is linked to dementia and obesity. According to the World Health Organization, in children, it can stunt brain growth, reduce lung function, and trigger asthma and cause cancers, chronic respiratory diseases, cardiovascular diseases, and even strokes. One of the basic duties of a local authority is to promote public health. So wherever possible, it should be the duty of a local authority to provide alternatives to polluted streets. One example is the Alban Way. In your article, Debbie White states that St Albans had considered installing lighting along the Alban Way, but had decided that this would be too expensive. Did she mean the entire 6 mile length of the Alban Way? There are surely measures which would be far cheaper. In sections with the most footfall, perhaps lighting could be installed. As the Alban Way also doubles as a wildlife corridor, to minimise light pollution, why not use lighting with photoelectric cells so the lighting only comes on when somebody is passing? Cat's eyes along the edge of the path could be another possibility. Where possible, the path could be made wider without significantly reducing the area of the surrounding vegetation. By the way, have there been any studies carried out as to the amount of footfall along any parts of the Alban Way and in which section? If the public felt safer using the Alban Way, then more people would greatly benefit from using this great facility.
I'm reading an article by Les Kazin entitled Israel Ignorance. I must take exception with the views of Alan Bunting about the state of Israel. Has he ever visited the country? I'm presently in Tel Aviv, where Jews and Arabs work and live side by side. Muslims and Christians eat in the same restaurants without discrimination. On Christmas Eve, the RC St. Peter's Church in Jaffa advertised a Christmas Mass celebration which would be held at differing times in English, Polish, Russian and Hebrew, which other multicultural Eastern countries even allow Christianity to flourish. During that evening, we could also hear the calls to prayer emanating from the three local mosques. Israel is home to over 1.5 million Arabs who have equal voting rights, with many Arabs selected as members of the Knesset, Parliament, and also have equal education and health benefits. Many Arabs and Bedouin service in the Israel forces also. No notice is taken of Muslim ladies wearing traditional clothing or with their faces veiled. They are simply part of the population. If Israel is an apartheid country, why is it home to many Somali and Sudanese refugees and thousands of non-Jews from many other countries? The Tanzanian lady who services our apartment has lived here for 19 years with her husband and children and would not wish to return to Tanzania. Her eldest daughter is about to enlist in the army. At Christmas, there are thousands of religious pilgrims from many African countries touring the country before spending time celebrating in Jerusalem and Bethlehem. I would also mention that the Israeli government contributed large sums towards the urgently required repairs to the Holy Sepulchre Church in Jerusalem. I presume that he did not watch the recent Channel 4 TV programme on research and a possible cure for MS, featuring a team of doctors in Israel consisting of Arabs, Jews and Greeks all working together. So much of the world's medical and technological innovation originates from Israel. Israel continues to remain under threat of annihilation from extremists and many of its neighbouring countries, and constantly has to deal with attacks on its citizens. Is Mr. Bunting one of those who consider that Israel has no right to exist as a sovereign state recognised since 1948 by the UN? Should it return land captured in wars against countries that threatened its very existence? It returned a modern redeveloped Gaza to the Palestinians, who have destroyed much of its development because it was done by Israel while occupied. Israel's security forces constantly deal with extremists intent on destroying the state in the same way that the UK's security services have needed to for the past several years. Is that unreasonable? The families of captured terrorists are paid pensions and the millions of pounds of foreign aid given by the UK to the Palestinian government. This is what Priti Patel was trying to stop before she was dismissed. Might I suggest that Mr Bunting takes a flight from Luton and spends a few weeks in the country and sees firsthand how free and integrated the population is, which will hopefully give him a totally different perspective of Israel.
Here's a letter from Mary Barton of Ayot St Peter. And the heading is Dog Ownership and Veganism. Rupert Evershed's Nature Notes column on the joys of dog ownership was a delight to read, but I have to say that he does give a rather cosy and one-sided picture. I have the good fortune to live in a rural area, and local farmers and other landowners have a rather more jaundiced view of the dog-owning classes. There seems to be a divine right of dog owners, which means that dogs and their owners are free to do what they want. Once you have a dog, you no longer have to keep to footpaths, but can wander anywhere you like on a field, disturbing wildlife, destroying birds' nests and damaging crops. You can allow Fido to leave piles of poo anywhere he wants and decorate the countryside trees with plastic bags containing excrement. Fido will be allowed off his lead to chase wildlife and harass sheep. I have seen a well-behaved dog attack a pregnant fallow deer near Wheathampstead, leaving it and its young seriously injured. I've seen several dogs catch pheasants, leaving them dead or injured. One owner stuffed an injured pheasant into my hedge, thinking that he could hide his dog's crime. A weekly occurrence is for dogs to be allowed to roam freely across farmland and into my garden, chasing my cats and leaving them almost too traumatised to leave the house. Of course, there are many responsible dog owners, but in my experience, the irresponsible owners far outnumber those who are more thoughtful. I was also delighted to read Becky Alexander's local foodie column about veganism. It's heartwarming to read a positive article about this increasingly popular lifestyle choice. Having been a healthy and happy vegan for more than 20 years, I'm really encouraged by the number of people who are choosing a compassionate and cruelty-free way of living. Veganism is good for our health, it's good for the planet, and better for animals. Animal farming is responsible for around 18% of greenhouse gases. It's a major source of water pollution of both rivers and seas, and it's turning great tracts of the earth to desert as we destroy forests for crops to feed cattle. Animal production is also driving antibiotic resistance. Most people become vegan for the animals, many of whom live short, dismal lives. If slaughterhouses and factory farms had glass walls, I'm sure that many more people would be vegan.
And this next letter, it's an anonymous letter because the name and address have been withheld. It's about supermarket noise. We fully sympathise with Rosalind Marshall's outrage at Morrison's lack of consideration for residents, as we suffer similar from Waitrose. The noise from a goods yard in a residential area is excessive for too great a daily window of operation, 7 o'clock in the morning to 10 o'clock at night, normally. But when deliveries double in the run-up to the festive period, it's non-stop noise for longer hours. However, last year Waitrose excelled itself by installing a couple of refrigerated containers in its goods yard. One container, placed about 20 metres from the backs of houses, disturbed us all when it was turned on and prevented my daughter sleeping in her back bedroom. When we complained to a Waitrose night duty manager, he said it was full of turkeys and couldn't be turned off. Hopefully the council weekend night staff, witnessing the noise at 11:30 at night, which contravenes the 1996 Noise Act, will prevent a repetition this year.
Historic City Pub promises full disabled facilities in refurbishment. Ye Old Fighting Cocks, one of England's oldest and St Albans' most popular pubs, has promised to include new equipment for disabled people as part of a planned £1 million refurbishment. Landlord Christo Tafali is changing his plans for the redevelopment of the pub to include more equipment for disabled patrons. he decided to make the adjustments after reading an article on the lack of such services in restaurants. He said, "I was stunned by my ignorance, not knowing a disabled loo does not have disabled services. We need a bench and a hoist, but there was not going to be a bench or a hoist. It was the furthest thing from my mind. It's just horrible that people are struggling." Mother Sarah Brisdian made national news headlines after revealing how she had to lie her disabled 7-year-old on urine-soaked restaurant toilet floors to change him. Miss Brisdian has been photographing herself on the floors of public toilets across the country to highlight the plight of people who need changing facilities. Christo said, "We're bringing the pub into 2018. I think it's important we're in a very lucky position with our historic significance to be able to make a go at things. Within the loo, there was enough room to move and get a wheelchair out, but someone with cerebral palsy having to change on a toilet floor is unthinkable. We think we are doing the right thing by having a hoist which can lift someone off a floor to a changing bench. The changes to the original plans involve moving a wall back slightly to accommodate the extra space. The architect for the build has already cleared the changes." Christo added, "Today's society is very sheltered. You go to an office and then you go home, but when you're in a pub you see disabled people all day long. Some are obvious and some are not. For those who are obvious, society should have catered for them years ago. Having an old building is no excuse. I want to make this place as good as possible. I want to make it accessible and make a difference. Sarah will visit the pub with other disabled representatives later this year, and the Fighting Cock's plans should be submitted to St Albans District Council soon." And the article's accompanied by a photo of the model for the refurbishment being planned for ye old Fighting Cocks.
The article I'm reading is "Delicatessen set to downsize after expensive legal battle, but no reduction in goods." A long-standing and popular St Albans delicatessen is set to downsize next month following years of legal battles. Tony Picciuto's Italian deli on Latimer Road, Buongiorno Italia, is currently split between two properties, one of which is up for redevelopment into a residential home. After initially fighting the scheme, Tony has decided to save himself further legal fees needed to fight the change and embrace the shop floor reduction. He said, "The attempts to save the shop were becoming expensive and futile, so we decided to consider all the good stuff rather than the bad stuff. Our customers were very loyal. They came to us when we were very small. They came back to us then when we expanded, and our customers will come back when we downsize. We still have a lovely shop, and it will just be a bit more cosy." Tony added the campaign had already cost tens of thousands of pounds. "I'm a little bit disappointed, to tell you the truth, but we thought the fight to be more clean-cut, and it wasn't. It would have been a long, expensive battle." He has no plans to reduce the number of items on sale and will just pack all the products into a smaller space instead. Patrons showed their support following the announcement on the deli's Facebook page.
This article is about the St Albans Curry Club. I didn't know there was one of those. Anyway, the title is "Curry Club Crowns Its Top Tandoori After Sampling the City's Indian Restaurants." The six club members chose the Chili Bar and Kitchen in London Road as the best in St Albans for the third year running, with a score of 8.9 out of 10. Second on the list was Chili Raj, followed by Via Dara, then Cafe Masala, New Gulshan, Zafran, the St Albans Tandoori, Devdas, and lastly the Alban Tandoori and Mumtaz. Curry Club member Sam Pillar said, "We go to about 10 different Indian restaurants, and we go on a monthly basis to spread them across the year. There's no formal scoring criteria, but everyone does it based on a number of different things: the service, the food, and the curry itself. Everyone has different curries, and a lot of people will try the same curry in different restaurants. What we're looking for is somewhere that's got brilliant service, a nice look to it, and that it's got really good quality food. We also judged the quality of the poppadoms and condiments, as well as the curry itself.
Paralympic rower on course for victory in 3,000-mile cross-Atlantic adventure. A phenomenal Paralympian is competing in a rowing race across the Atlantic Ocean with only one leg and winning. Army vet Jordan Beecher, an alumnus of Marlborough School, was on his third deployment in Afghanistan in 2012 when an improvised explosive device blew off his leg 12 centimetres below the knee. Although Jordan had to leave the parachute regiment, he has since won 4 Invictus Games gold medals, trained with the GB rowing team, and competed in the Henley Royal Regatta. Now, along with fellow soldier John Armstrong, Jordan has taken the challenge to row 3,000 miles from La Gomera to Antigua as part of the Talisker Whiskey Atlantic Challenge. They aim to raise £100,000 for Blesma the Limbless Veterans, which supported Jordan after the injury, Sick Children's Holiday Charity Dream Flight, and the Gurkha Brigade Association. John and Jordan, Team Titan, set off on December the 14th last year and have been fiercely rowing in two-hour shifts, 24 hours a day, ever since. The race is expected to finish around January the 18th, more than 30 days of grueling competition, and despite capsizing and temporarily slipping into second place, they still powered forward and are now on course to win. Team Titan have faced waves 6 metres high, seen whales up close, are surviving on military rations, and are tackling sleep deprivation, hallucinations and seasickness. More people have climbed Mount Everest than have completed this challenge, and all of the other contestants are able bodied. And there are some pictures of Jordan here. One of a very happy, relaxed looking Jordan at last year's London Boat Show, and a more serious Jordan in his rowing boat.
Mum runs 5k a day for homeless charity. A determined mum has raised nearly £1,300 by running 5k a day around the city's streets throughout December. Caroline Young, 43, went out in gales, storms, snow, sleet and rain to complete the challenge, which accumulates to nearly 4 marathons and 100 miles. When it was icy, she was forced to jog in the middle of the road to avoid the treacherous pavements. Almost £1,300 in sponsorship is being donated to local homeless charity Centre 33. She said, "The storm came, the ice came, the snow came, Christmas came, and then I got cramps in my calves. It was tough because I didn't get any rest days and I had to run continuously, but I survived it and I managed to run, not walk." Caroline explained why she chose Centre 33 to benefit. "When the weather gets colder, I feel terrible if I walk past a homeless person and don't give them money. So I thought, what a better thing to do and help people in my local area without homes. It was tough, but by the time I finished, I could go and have a nice cup of tea in my home, but they can't." Caroline has 2 children, aged 11 and 9, who came along for some of the runs. She added, "My kids have even joined me a couple of times. They're beginning to understand how tough life is for some people and how they can't warm up with a hot chocolate and a radiator."
The article I'm now reading is, "A St Albans school is giving pupils a chance to audition for a prestigious youth theatre company. The National Youth Theatre, NYT, audition tour is coming to Beaumont School in Oakwood Drive. 40 pupils from the school will spend the day auditioning for the company on January 17. The pupils will take part in a 3-hour workshop and will then have an interview and perform a monologue in front of the National Theatre visitors. Former Beaumont pupils have worked at the National Theatre both as performers and in backstage roles. Head of drama Zoe Shepherd said, "We are thrilled that the National Youth Theatre will be giving our students this wonderful opportunity. We have so many talented and dedicated drama students. I just wish they had time to see more of them." Every year the NYT auditions more than 5,000 young people.
This item is entitled Snowdrop Festival. a snowdrop festival is being held in Wheathamstead as part of a national scheme. In 2018, 100 gardens will be open for the third annual National Garden Scheme Snowdrop Festival, some with as many as 300 varieties of snowdrop. The Wheathamstead Festival will be held in Water End House, Water End Lane, on Saturday, February the 24th. Visitors can explore a four-acre garden outside the Jacobean Manor House. National Garden Scheme Executive George Plumtree said, "During our first Snowdrop Festival in 2016, many of our garden owners were overwhelmed by the amount of visitors that attended their openings. So, whether you want to admire the different varieties of snowdrops or just have a walk in lovely surroundings, followed by a nice cup of tea and a slice of cake, visiting a National Garden Scheme garden in February, on the 24th, will be the perfect escape. The admission will be £5, with children going in free."
A Harpenden organisation, which aims to help people in the community, raised thousands of pounds for charity over the holidays. The Harpenden Lions manned the Round Table Santa Float for two evenings in December, raising nearly £1,000 for Round Table charities. They also held their own street collection in Harpenden Town Centre and Southdown, which raised more than £1,500 for Dementia Friends. Lions James Penn and Paul Neild treated shoppers in the Southdown Co-op to a medley of Christmas songs, and an assortment of Lions travelled to the Sue Ryder Care Home in Hitchin, accompanied by the St Albans Brass Band, to perform carols. The group also raised and donated £250 to the Trussell Trust Food Bank and helped the Hospice of St Francis raise more than £4,000 in donations by collecting Christmas trees from Harpenden families for recycling.
Now, if you enjoy listening to the radio, here are some of the programme highlights that lie ahead during the coming week, which you might like to hear. Starting with Saturday, January the 13th, and on Radio 4 Extra from 9 a.m, you can indulge in a pick of the best of that spine-tingling programme, Soul Music. Soul Music has been running for 25 years on Radio 4 and has notched up some powerful personal stories that are bound up in the memories stirred by a particular piece of music. In this special edition, presenter and singer Kerris Matthews picks her favourites, from astronaut Christopher Ferguson being brought back to down to earth by memories of Can't Take My Eyes Off You, to the healing powers of You're My Sunshine. Soul Music mixtape starts at 9 a.m. on Radio 4 Extra, but if you miss it then, you can catch it again at 7 p.m. And on chilly January days, there's nothing like a good drama to help pass the time. On Saturday afternoon from 2:30 on Radio 4, you can hear Memento Mori, an adaptation of Muriel Spark's 1959 darkly comic novel. A peculiar caller has been harassing a group of elderly people. The caller uses the same phrase to each member of the group, saying, "Remember, you must die." The phone calls force each victim to examine their lives as the mystery unfurls. The play is part of the celebrations to mark the centenary of Muriel Spark's birth. A Memento Mori starts at 2:30 on Saturday on Radio 4. Then in the evening, a tug at the heartstrings over on Radio 3 for opera fans. It's what's known by opera buffs as Cav and Pag, Cavalleria Rusticana and Pagliacci, the well-known double bill giving a slice of real-life drama, set in the villages of southern Italy and Sicily. The performance comes from the New York Met and starts at 6:30 on Radio 3. If you'd rather have a bit of horror, then try Frankenstein Lives on Radio 4 at 8 p.m. on Saturday. This Archive on 4 programme marks the bicentenary of Mary Shelley's notorious creation, and follows the monster's story from birth through to the retellings on stage and screen, which created a myth for our time.
on to Sunday, January 14th now, and if you're awake early in the morning, you might like to tune in to Something Understood on Radio 4 from 6:05 a.m. Mark Tully, who used to be the BBC's man in Delhi, presents this programme which uses readings and music to contemplate a spiritual theme. It's a reflective journey this week which explores the symbolic power of fire both in religious and secular imagery. There's poetry from Simon Armitage and Christina Rossetti, music from Holston Tchaikovsky, and the reflections of designer Sarah Van Gameren, who created an artwork with 100,000 lit matches. If you're an owl rather than a lark, Something Understood is repeated on Sunday evening on Radio 4 at 11:30 p.m. The Castaway on Desert Island Discs at 11:15 a.m. on Radio 4 on Sunday is the chef Angela Hartnett. She's a very down-to-earth person and a superb chef with Michelin stars to her name, so it'd be interesting to hear what her 8 discs include and what her luxury will be. She once confessed on Woman's Hour that she often goes home after work cooking up amazing creations in her restaurant and tucks into a plate of baked beans on toast before bed. And foodies will also be celebrated on the food programme on Radio 4 at 12:30 p.m. on Sunday, when Sheila Dillon launches this year's Food and Farming Awards. The awards recognise the unsung heroes of UK food and farming who have been nominated by listeners. Then over on Classic FM on Sunday evening from 7 p.m, David Mellor presents a celebration of the English composer Hubert Parry, he of Jerusalem fame. It's a centenary of Parry's death this year, and this programme will look at his contribution to the Renaissance of English music, including music written by his star pupils Holst and Vaughan William.
Moving now to some of the programmes that are broadcast at the same time from Monday to Friday during the week. The book of the week is In Search of Mary Shelley, written by Fiona Sampson. Mary Shelley was, of course, married to the poet, and she was also the daughter of the social reformer Mary Wollstonecraft. If you listened to the archive on 4 programme on Saturday about Mary Shelley's creation, The Monster Frankenstein, then you might be interested to hear more about her through Book of the Week each day on Radio 4 at 9:45 a.m. The 15-minute drama each day at 10:45 and repeated in the evening at 7:45 on Radio 4 is How to Survive the Roman Empire by Pliny and Me. It's back to the first century with Hattie Naylor's subtly funny take on the Roman Empire, complete with sex, plotting and intrigue. On Radio 3, the composer of the week is Beethoven, and in particular Beethoven the Pianist, and the period in which he composed his 5 piano concertos. That's at 12 noon on Radio 3 from Monday to Friday. And staying on Radio 3, each evening this week at 10:45 p.m, you can hear Transformations, 5 stories from Ovid's Metamorphoses. These are 5 dramatisations of stories about different aspects of love, from tales told in the Roman writer Ovid's narrative poem. It's a chance to catch up on some of the earliest myths.
And looking now at some of the other programmes during the week, Chris Evans, who of course hosts The Breakfast Show on Radio 2 every day from 6:30 a.m, launches his children's writing competition on Monday, January the 15th. The competition, called 500 Words, is open to every 5 to 13-year-old with a mission to get excited about reading and writing. On Tuesday, January the 16th, a new series of Word of Mouth begins at 4 p.m. on Radio 4. This week, hosts Michael Rosen and Laura Wright take as their theme the art of greeting. To help them say hello in many ways is ex-diplomat Andy Scott, who's greeted people in more than 60 countries and has written a book about his experience called One Kiss or Two. So the origins and the psychology of saying hello is on Radio 4 at 4 p.m. on Tuesday. If you're still awake around 11:15 p.m. on Wednesday, January the 17th, you could hopefully have a laugh with Rhys James as he launches his new comedy series on Radio 4. It's called Rhys James is Privileged, and he'll explore different aspects of his good fortune and even chat to his mum and dad about it. And lastly, a programme on Friday, January the 19th. At 11 a.m. on Radio 4, the historian Amanda Foreman introduces listeners to stories from the Royal Collection. These are narratives hidden amongst the documents and ledgers in the Royal Collection and Archive. For instance, the Prince Regent, the future King George IV, waged a secret campaign against the satirical artists of his time who so annoyed him. Then there are memoranda and messages penned by Prince Albert about the forthcoming Great Exhibition of 1851. Stories from the Royal Collection will be broadcast on Friday at 11 a.m. on Radio 4.
And here is a very brief reminder of some of the entertainments which you could go to in the next couple of weeks or so. The Abbey Theatre have a new production starting next Friday, the 19th of January, and being performed on that Friday and Saturday evening and the following Wednesday, Thursday, Friday and Saturday evening at 7:30. It's an interesting play about two volunteers to a drug trial, and inevitably they're of opposing sexes, and a relationship develops. It's said to be outstanding. Musically, as ever in this area, there's a lot of interesting music around. Some of it based at the cathedral. There are the regular lunchtime organ recitals on Wednesdays, usually at 12:30 every other week. And there is a concert at the cathedral by the Amadeus Chamber Orchestra. On a somewhat lighter note, musically, and it may interest some of you, devotees of the 70s group ABBA, there is a concert of ABBA's music in the next 2 weeks at the Urban Arena. Finally, in Harpenden this Saturday, the 13th of January at 7:30 p.m. at St Nicholas Church, there is a charity concert of popular music composed by Beethoven, Schubert, Vivaldi and Mendelssohn, including, I know, Beethoven's Eroica Symphony. There are also two cello concertos, and the concert is raising money for the Telangiectasia Society. So if you're interested in any of those, contact the sites of the concerts or plays and go along if you're able to. We have now come to the end of this recording. And so from John, Angela, Roy and Kate, and from Danny, Fiona, Mickey and Mickey, goodbye, and here's to the next time.
End of Sutton recording for January 2018.